latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Christine Alexander. With me in the studio, Shaka Hislop, Ali Moreno. How's it going, guys?
How are you, Christina?
Good.
Welcome. Oh, by the way.
Thank you.
By the way, upgrade. More you, less Sebastian Salazar. We're already winning.
Wow.
We're already winning.
So that's the way we're starting the show, with this apparent hijack now instead of Sebi Salazar.
Another hijack, so to speak.
Hey, Sebi, another hijack, of course. Apparently, Barcelona is now very interested in Rafinha's services, and apparently the only thing that they're waiting for is the yes from Rafinha, who has expressed as well his desire to go to the Blaugrana club instead of Chelsea. With more on that, Gemma Soler joins us on ESPN FC. Stuart Robson is also with us. And Gemma, a few days ago you had told us Barcelona has no money. Now, where is this deal coming from?
Hola, Cristina. Yes, well, they activated something, and this is privatizing a club who belongs to the members. So this means that if Barcelona is a firm, probably it's not as good now because they decided to sell some interesting part of them. But as a football club, they are stronger because they will be having money to sign. They still don't have it. They have just sold the 10% of the TV rights for 25 years. This means, I mean, we thought that would be 200 million, but President Laporta just told us a few hours ago that that means 260, and they will sell, they will try to sell it before doing the US tour, the 15% of the TV rights, for to make that 25%. He told us that they expect to get 400 million euros from that. We weren't expecting that much money for the next 24 years. So this 400 plus 250 means 6,650. But in the matter of signing is what we are interested about. They thought this will mean 200 million euros to sign. With that money, President Laporta has just tell me, they expect to sign, wait for it, Lewandowski, Rafinha, retain Dembélé and Bernardo Silva. In my opinion, they are selling us a too much optimistic message. I think that's impossible. If we count on the selling of Frenkie de Jong, about 85 million euros, maybe that could be possible. I think the three forward, Rafinha, Lewandowski and Dembélé, maybe they could have two of the three. And Bernardo Silva, if they sell Frenkie de Jong, why not? It could be possible. It looks like an interesting thing with these additions, Chris.
Ale, is this a good deal with Rafinha, at least to start, for Barca?
Well, first of all, who's auditing this? Who's the accountant that is taking this on? Because, quite frankly, the conversation around Barcelona in the recent history has been financial struggles, financial instability. And now you just seem to be mortgaging the club. You just seem to be, well, if we do that and then we get this, and then if that falls into place, then maybe we go after that player. It doesn't sound like it's the best way to go about running a club, or running a business for that matter. There's a lot of ifs going on here with Barcelona. And why don't you find stability first, and then you can make decisions, even if that take a couple of years? Hey, look, listen, we're going to struggle for the next couple of seasons, but we're going to find stability, and then we can be on the market for players like Rafinha. Now, in the case of Rafinha, all I would say is this is driven by the player, and sometimes we talk about the power of players. He wants to go to Barcelona. There are other options out there, Chelsea being one of those main options. But if the player wants to go to Barcelona, and his agent, Deco, who's a former Barcelona player, now is making this happen, then it seems like perhaps the player will give the hometown discount to Barcelona. It will give some leniency to Barcelona and say, yeah, sure, pay me over the next 25 years. Who knows? Talk about creative accounting. How are you going to be able to pay for the players that Gemma just mentioned? No clue. Gemma just threw these numbers out there. These are numbers that we're believing the president, and we're saying, oh yeah, hey, President Laporta, we believe you. We know that this money's coming in. at this point with Barcelona, I don't know what to believe. We're told that the club is in financial instability, and then all this name gets thrown on the table. I don't know how that works. It doesn't add up in mathematics alone. Just math, simple math.
Well, and Gemma also knows that since Joan Laporta said that they would keep Messi, a lot of fans maybe don't really believe him. So it's not a surprise that there's a little bit of distrust. But financials aside, money aside, Stuart, would this be a good option for Barca?
Depends whether they kept Dembele or not, because Dembele plays on the right-hand side. He's a left-footed player who likes to sweep the ball into his path and then cross with his right foot or come in on his left foot and get shots away, as he did at the end of the season when he played very well. Funnily enough, that's exactly what Rafinha does for Leeds, and he does it very well. Who's the better player? I think potential. Rafinha's got a little bit more potential now. He's a younger, or he's a player that hasn't had so many injuries. Obviously, Dembele's had his problems at Barcelona. He came to the fore towards the end of the season and started to realise his potential. But Rafinha was excellent at Leeds in a poor side. Maybe he's the player to look for, and Dembele might just go on his way.
So is this a vision now for Barcelona, Gemma, to have both Rafinha and, as you said, retain Dembele to see them on the pitch together?
I like that you make me that question, because it's the question I asked Joan Laporta when he was saying all that names, like, can these players play together? The first thing he told us is that Xavi believes so, because he can put both in both sides, and he really thinks they are both can play together at the same time, and they can make an impact, and they can be game changers. So that's what the most expert person in Barcelona right now, who is Xavi Hernandez, believes. So we will see, because about Dembele, there is one last offer in his table, the last of 100 offers. We've been with this soap opera for about 8 months, and this means that he will be making the 40% less of his salary. This is a salary similar to the one that Ansu Fati is getting. He doesn't like the money, but he is very, very wanting to stay, is what he's telling the president, Xavi. So it's only a question of money, and they are quite confident that he will be end up staying, because he had the best time of his career under Xavi. He hasn't been injured in the last 6 months. This is big news after seasons of awful seasons, because of he was not able to play. So he's been extremely fit in the last games. So we will see if eventually himself, his agent, who has a lot of power to deal with that, Sissoko, they think what the best for him is to stay in Barcelona, where he has been playing his better football of his career.
So with Rafinha now maybe a little bit close to Barcelona, should Chelsea make a move for Dembele?
I understand Barcelona's interest in Dembele. If I'm Chelsea, at the numbers that apparently Dembele is after, I'm not sure that it's worth it. Dembele is after an awful lot of money. And while he probably showed that he can be worth that in the last 6 months of last season, that's all we've seen from Dembele. And so the question then becomes, How big a gamble do you want to take? Is it the Dembele that we saw for, what was it, 3.5 years, or the Dembele that we saw in the last 6 months? I just feel that's a very expensive gamble for a player that you're not quite sure how he fits in. Money no object, I'd take the chance, but given the kind of money that Dembele is supposedly asking for, if I'm Chelsea, I'm a little bit reluctant.
It's a very expensive gamble for Chelsea. It's a very expensive gamble for Barcelona as well. You have seen this player. You have seen the last 6 months, and you're falling in love with the last 6 months. Right, so you're ignoring the time before that. Did that not happen? Was that not part of the story? The injuries didn't happen, the inconsistency, the lack of professionalism, all those things didn't happen. Are we willing to just turn the page and say, hey, great 6 months when you were showing yourself to the world? Because that's exactly what you were doing. It was the opportunity for you to showcase and say, I am here and I'm available. You want me? Come and get me, right? Do I trust a player that knows he's showcasing himself to the world for 6 months, and I ignore the rest of his career at Barcelona? again, if I were in that boardroom making financial decisions, I would say, no, no, don't do this. No, don't do this. Financial responsibility. But apparently, that is not exactly what's going on at Barcelona right now.
The thing is, the timing of the switch from Koeman to Xavi has served Dembele well. Because he's come in and played well, and now everything is, well, under Dembele, under Xavi, this is who Dembele is. But if Xavi had been manager for 2 years, for argument's sake, and we got the last 6 months that we see, I don't think he has the kind of negotiating power that he does in being able to say that under Xavi, that's when I'm at my absolute best. The other thing for me is, and we keep talking about this, Barcelona got themselves in trouble through, as Gab Marcotti put it, creative accounting. This just seems like Barca are making the same mistake yet again. I wish I could go to my bank manager and say, listen, I'll mortgage my TV, my cable bill for the next 25 years to pay you off. I really wish I could. I don't see how this makes sense for Barcelona, given their issues, given the fact that you're taking that, you're mortgaging 25 years of albeit part of your revenues for a player in Rafinha who is young, but you're not quite sure, coming from a different club, coming from a different league, Dembele, who you've gotten 6 months out of, and Lewandowski, who's deep into his 30s. That, it just does not make financial sense to me, especially from a club who are trying to get themselves out of financial difficulty.
But now we have a brand on the stadium, so there you go. That's good. We named the stadium.
At least, yeah. The
problem solved.
First step, get out of financial debt. Bartomeu's probably like, oops, sorry, guys. But we also know, Gemma, that they need a center back. My question is, are you available for Barcelona?
I'm available and I'm waiting for my opportunity. This was my first game at the Camp Nou. I think it's gonna be my last one. I was a central back and I threw a full back sometimes. I did quite a shameful performance, but I play at the Joan Laporta team. They play the first half, I play the second half. We were behind and we had to come from behind. I did with my team and we end up winning 4-3. Not thanks of me, but I did my best. I put a lot of attitude, more than quality, but yeah, I'm available. And you know what? The Camp Nou is really big. I never thought that when I was sitting in the sideline. It's really long. It was exhausting, my God. I admire you football players. Now I won't be able to criticize Gerard Piqué, Jordi Alba, Sergio Dest. Never again. Sorry, guys.
You're going to end every segment with, they tried really hard.
Right there, but they tried really hard. Yeah, and that was really big.
They give me the T-shirt. That's the... the only prize I got today.
You know how long it takes for me to get from this end to that end? Oh, no.
Oh, my
Gemma,
God.
Lord. Thank you so much for telling us now a unique perspective for football players that we have in the studio. And thank you so much for being with us. For more on ESPN FC, check out our YouTube page.
Thank you.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For Liverpool fans, Mohamed Salah will stay 3 more years at the club, being linked to the Reds now until 2025 for a reported £350,000 a week, approximately £150,000 more than any other player in the club. Now, Jurgen Klopp, of course, very happy to have him stick around for a few more years. Here's what he had to say about his star player. I have no doubt Mo's best years are still to come, and that's saying something because the first 5 seasons here have been the stuff of legend. Now, Stuart, I want to start with you because Stevie had always said that it's really worth breaking the bank for somebody like Mohamed Salah. Do you agree?
Yes, because I think he's a good character. You know, Arsenal tried to do it with Aubameyang. It didn't quite work. Everybody said they've got to spend anything they can to keep him, and it didn't work for them. But to keep Mo Salah, he's been a great professional for them. He's still, I think, got pace. He can still run past people. He's got the enthusiasm. He's got the hunger. He'll score goals. He'll make goals. And I think he's a player that the fans love as well, and the other players love as well. So I think it's absolutely perfect for Liverpool to keep him. Mane's gone. Salah's going to be the focal point. They've got a new player in Nunes coming in as well. Jota, the likes, Diaz, is still going to be a good forward line, but they had to sign Mo Salah again, and they've done exactly that. Liverpool will be a force to be reckoned with again next season.
Ali, do you agree?
I do. I, however, do not agree with the fact that you're trying to create issues in the Liverpool locker room already.
No.
When you're pointing out that the guy's going to make $150,000 more than any other player in that club. I have to tell you, players don't think that way. And some people may think that's an issue. When it comes to contract negotiations, players respect how other players get their business done. And so whatever other people may think of, well, now he's in a different level entirely. Maybe he's not going to struggle paying his cable bill. He's going to be all right. But it doesn't mean that other players will be like, well, nah, he's making $150,000 more than any of us. Not quite the case. In regards to Mohamed Salah, it was a no-brainer. And certainly even more so when you allow Sadio Mane to walk out the door. That's saying, you know what, we are going all in with Salah. Let's work with this contract, let's negotiate an extension, and let's get it done because we need goals. And where are the goals going to come from? Well, obviously, over the past few seasons, it's been Mohamed Salah, and I don't think he's given any signs that that's going to slow down anytime soon.
I think £150,000 a week more than anybody else in the dressing room can cause problems. You've seen it at other clubs with different circumstances. But with Mohamed Salah, the one thing that players respect, it's performance. So while somebody may be making, you may have to break the wage structure to sign a certain player, if that player has proven his worth, I don't think there'll be any other player who'll question that. Now, the challenge for Mo Salah to continue to prove that he is worth that £350,000 a week. But for me, or if I was sitting in that dressing room, I think he's done more than enough to suggest that, to show himself as the leader of this club, at least over the next few years, and you do not question that discrepancy. I think this is really good business for both Liverpool and Mo Salah.
And it's also nice to see, when you see the story going on with Bayern Munich and Lewandowski, It is nice to see that a club is willing to take care of the player that they have there. Not the big name player that may come in, not the whoever the next big thing is going to be, or the hottest name, the hottest property. In the case of Bayern Munich, it was Erling Haaland. That didn't quite work out. And now you made Lewandowski angry. Now your goal scorer, your main guy, wants to leave. How does that work? And in the case of Liverpool, they've been able to manage what was and could have potentially have been a tricky situation with Sadio Mane and Firmino and Salah. Who do we take care of? It's like Sadio Mane was more than happy to go to Bayern Munich, go make his money, and then Mohamed Salah stays and gets paid. everybody's happy. Certainly, if you're a Liverpool fan, you should be happy as well.
Yeah, absolutely, especially since last week it was kind of feeling like it could maybe be something different in the sale of Mohamed Salah. Now, on to the Spurs. We stay in the Premier League. Stuart, here a little bit of the movements that now the Spurs have done. Now, let's talk about your boy, Antonio Conte. Do you like the business he has made so far?
Yes, to a certain degree. I think Richarlison will give them a little bit of everything, because if Harry Kane doesn't play, he's unfit, he can play at centre forward. If Harry Kane is fit, he can play in the wide areas. If Song's not fit, he can swap positions with Kulusevski, so that works. Bissouma's a player that I've always liked at Brighton. I saw him two or three seasons ago and I couldn't understand why Chris Hughton didn't have him in the team much earlier. Then when he came into the team, he's an all-round midfield player. He's strong, he's a good passer of the ball. I think it'd be an outstanding signing for them. And, you know, and Perisic, who last season I thought had his best season for Inter playing as a left wing back. That's exactly what Conte plays. He plays with wing backs. Perisic, I think, will do a really good job. There's talk of Longley going to Spurs to play in that back three. I'm not sure, and I think Ali would probably agree with me. I hope he agrees with me, that Longley over the last couple of years at Barcelona hasn't looked like a top class player. And I don't think he's going to improve Spurs if he does go there.
Now, on Richarlison first.
Okay.
Do you like him for Spurs? Enough to compete against Kulusevski, for example?
Well, I think Richarlison is a better player than Kulusevski. I think he's an upgrade on Kulusevski. Now, I don't know that that's a position where Richarlison would like to play the most, but the position that he would like to play the most, which is sometimes down the middle or off to the right-hand side, that's going to be taken up by Heung-Min Son and Harry Kane. So if you want to find a place on the field and you're Richarlison, yeah, you're going to have to take perhaps that right-hand side coming from a wider area. If it comes down to, do I play Kulusevski, do I play Richarlison? I'll play Richarlison. I think he has more variety in his game, and I think he brings a lot more offensively, and certainly in creativity, size, goals, productivity, than Kulusevski does. In terms of Clément Lenglet, yes, I agree with you, Stewie. I agree with you. Yes. If I'm Spurs, I stay away. Lenglet has been, instead of a player who we have seen progression, we have seen regression. We have seen a guy that has gone backwards. And talking about going backwards, speed is not his strength. I don't like this matchup at all of Lenglet being exposed in the Premier League with strikers that have speed to get around into the channel. And if you're playing with a back three, guess what? Strikers will spin off, get into the channel, and he's going to be forced to defend out wide. I don't like that matchup at all.
Well, it's interesting now, obviously, with that competition within a team is always healthy, especially when you're competing in the Champions League, but also with what has been COVID, of course, the normal injury season by season. What do you think of Conte's plan, Xhaka, to have a backup for every position?
Well, I think every club competing at the top end of the Premier League has to, especially as you go into a season with Champions League and meaningful European action also to contend with. So it makes sense that Antonio Conte continues to fill out the squad as he does. But right now, I'm in a little bit of disagreement with Ali. I don't see how Richarlison gets into that starting lineup as a preferred first choice, but it gives options.
Wait. So you're saying Kulusevski is better than Richarlison?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah. So then we disagree. Yes, you're correct.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm again in agreement with Bo Ali and Stewart in terms of Longley, but then as much as you criticize Longley, you look at Spurs back three, so many, Eric Dier just springs to mind, and that it never seemed like a natural fit as centre back either. So Spurs do need reinforcing, and without much availability, who do you go for? So there's no really good option for Antonio Conte in my mind, but you do need bodies if you are to continue to compete, if you do expect to finish top four at the very least again next season.
And we know that Tottenham doesn't really love to spend a lot, but with Antonio Conte now and trying to help with his chances in the Champions League, personally, Stuart, what do you think of the coach's now plan to finally get a little bit further in the Champions League looking for that title?
Absolutely. He's got to make sure that Spurs stay in the top four next season. They've got to have a good run in the Cups. They've got to have a good run in the Champions League, because they've given him some money. He's demanded that they back him. He had his tantrums last season, which he always will, Antonio Conte, when things aren't quite going right. but he's a very good coach. He proved that towards the end of the season. I think Spurs will get better and better under him, but they've got to make sure they get off to a good start. Get Antonio Conte happy, get the players playing to their certain system, and I think Spurs will have a good season. And when you go back to the centre-backs, they've got a couple that could come in, Rodon and Sanchez. Davinson Sanchez are the players in behind, which I wouldn't say are the greatest players, but that may be an area they need to improve.
Yeah, well, maybe thinking about the depth, that could be Longley, obviously not as a starter, of course, as all three of you can agree, and even me, honestly. Now on to Arsenal's transfer window. Here are the ins and outs with, of course, that attention on, according to reports, not official yet, Gabriel Jesus. Do you like this possible move now with the striker, Stuart?
Well, Arsenal need a striker. Obviously, Lacazette has gone, so they haven't really had an out-and-out centre-forward because they're good players playing in the wide areas. Now, Gabriel Jesus said many times last season when he was playing at Man City, I'm not really a centre-forward, I'm a right-winger. That's where I like to play for Brazil. That's where I feel happiest. And now he's going to come to Arsenal and be asked to play through the centre-forward position. He's got to make his mind up. Is he a centre-forward? Is he a right-winger? I think he can do both jobs. I think he's probably best when he plays out on the right-hand side. So it's a bit of a gamble for Arsenal, because when I have seen him play up front quite often by himself for Man City, he's been lost. And when he's back to goal, I don't think he's particularly good. So I think Arteta's got to get the best out of him. He's got to make sure he plays him in the right system, and he's got to get closer support to him. So that's a bit of a worry for me.
Can Arteta get the best of him, out of him?
Well, I think the question that we have to ask ourselves is, what's the best of Gabriel Jesus? He was in a really good situation in Manchester City in terms of players around him, and he wasn't always a starter for Manchester City, a team that needed a striker, that needed somebody to score goals. The responsibility fell to many players. He wasn't quite the guy. Now the question that Arsenal has to ask and Arteta has to ask is, can this guy now become the man to score goals for any club, and certainly for Arsenal? Is he going to be able to take that leap? I think he's an occasional goal scorer. I don't think he's an everyday goal scorer. He's a nice piece to have. I don't think he can be the angular piece. Gabriel Jesus is a really good player. I don't think he's quite elite. But perhaps that's the level that Arsenal are in. Mm-hmm. Who else are they going to go after that will be the man and the angular piece and elite level striker? There aren't many out there, so you might as well take a chance.
But there are a lot of attacking players that Arsenal have. Where does Gabriel Jesus now fit?
He has to fit through the middle. And when Gabriel Jesus arrived at Manchester City, it was as heir to Kun Aguero, through the middle. And not being able to displace Kun Aguero, though they swapped a couple of times, but not being able to displace him, I think dented Jesus' confidence. I'm backing Gabriel Jesus to do well as the man at Arsenal, as Ali put it, under Arteta. I think he plays through the middle. I don't see him playing anywhere else. And just given his own experience and given that need for leadership and experience in a very young Arsenal dressing room, I think he responds. And I'm backing Gabriel Jesus to grab 15 goals this season, to have Arsenal in the conversation for top four. I'm not sure that they get into top four just yet, but at least they're in the conversation, and Gabriel Jesus spearheads that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting too. We know, of course, Mikel Arteta used to be Pep Guardiola's assistant. So, of course, that kind of same mentality. Now, Gabriel Jesus could be a gunner. Now, for more, of course, from ESPN FC, you can head over to the ESPN FC page with more information on live transfer talk, of course, more Premier League information, La Liga, and Ligue 1.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, more transfer news. Christian Pulisic now being linked to Juventus in exchange for Matthijs de Ligt. Obviously, here are his last stats the last few years with Chelsea. Not too impressive. We know he wasn't getting that many minutes now with the Blues and struggling a little bit with injury. We talk a little bit more about it now with Nicky Bandini, who joins us on ESPN FC. Stewie's still with us. And Nicky, what's the latest? How true is this rumor with Pulisic going to Juventus and De Ligt to Chelsea?
It's definitely true that it's been discussed. Whether or not it's true that it's going to go through is a very different question. I think Juventus are reluctant with De Ligt to accept anything that isn't just a cash transfer. They would prefer to have just a cash transfer. They feel like they're giving up an asset they really don't want to give up, though. It's a very reluctant sale from their point of view. They're only really entertaining it because De Ligt only has 2 years left in his contract, and they want to be able to sell him while he still retains the maximum possible value. But they do want to think hard about how they're going to replace him, because they're already losing Giorgio Chiellini this summer. They were already really looking for a partner for De Ligt this summer. They were already looking for someone who could play that left-sided centre-back role alongside him. So if he leaves, you need to now replace your entire central defence, in effect. And I think for that reason, they're reluctant to accept a part exchange. But if they're going to accept a part exchange, I think Pulisic might just be a player who will at least interest them for his age as much as anything. You know, De Ligt is a 22-year-old player with his whole future ahead of him. Pulisic, likewise, 23 years old. It's an asset that you think you might be able to add value to rather than losing value on it.
Is he thinking about moving Ali because he needs more playing time? Look at all the attacking players Chelsea has.
Yeah, it's getting crowded. Well, it has been crowded, really, for Christian Pulisic. And part of the reason as to why American fans get all worked up about Christian Pulisic is, well, he's not getting the opportunities at Chelsea. Well, the reason he's not getting opportunities at Chelsea is because he hasn't quite earned those opportunities. And it is crowded. There is competition. It's a big club with big names. And so, therefore, you have to stay healthy. You have to be consistently productive. And he has not been for Chelsea. So, for me, if you're Christian Pulisic, you need to play, right? It's a World Cup year. Yeah. Everybody's going to make that argument. You need to play. Are you going to play more at Juventus? Well, I don't know. Are you going to play more at Chelsea? I don't know. You have to stay healthy, first and foremost. You do that, you'll give yourself an opportunity to, at the very least, compete at the highest level. For him at Chelsea, when he has played with consistency, he's been good. But those are 3 and 4 games at a time, and then he disappears for a month or two. That's never going to work. So he's got to get ready physically. He's got to be fit. He's got to be available for selection. And then he's going to have to be able to compete. And when he does that, then he'll find a place with consistency on the field.
Shaka, what do you think?
I think he needs to leave. There's too many similar midfielders to Christian Pulisic, and he's too far down the pecking order right now. In his first season, when he did get a good run in the game, he produced. But because of injuries and inconsistent, because of injuries, he wasn't able to find consistent form. And as Ali rightly points out, when you play for clubs like Chelsea, and dare I say, even Juventus, you have to be at the top of your form throughout. And injuries certainly does not help that. It's hindered him at Chelsea. Maybe he gets that opportunity at Juventus. But even so, seeing that, I just still think that Juventus move is maybe a step more than Christian Pulisic needs right now at this stage of his career.
What I would also say is that if you're Christian Pulisic and you sit back and you see all the flirting that is going on with Chelsea and all the other players out there, and all Raheem Sterling, all Rafinha, and you're looking back and saying, wait, hold on a second, Don't I play that position? Aren't I that guy? Well, obviously not. If they're flirting with everybody else and they're not flirting with you, that's a problem.
It's a big sign for Pulisic.
Yes.
Stuart, what do you think? Do his chances increase minutes-wise at Juventus? How would he fit in there?
As we heard from Nicky, I'm not sure that Juventus probably wants him. They don't want a swap deal. Pulisic would come in and he'd be another player playing in the role behind the main striker or playing the wide areas. Is he going to get any more playing time? And he's just said, is he going to get any more playing time at Juventus than he will at Chelsea? I'm not sure he will. Allegri's now having to rebuild because they've let one or two players go. So it's a rebuilding chance. If he does go there, he's got to have a very good start. He's got to make sure he breaks into the team. And as the two guys in the studio said, he's got to be consistent. He's got to play at his very best. And he's got to play well every week. And if he does that, he'll get a good run in the side and he'll be in top form. But he has to be more consistent. And he has to throw himself into the front line straight away.
Stuart, I want to stay with you because not only discussing what this could mean for Christian Pulisic now at Juventus, but what about Matthijs de Ligt at Chelsea? What do you think about that move?
Well, he's a good player. We know that he's a player that's strong in the tackle. He's fairly good in the air. I don't think he's as good on the ball as some other centre-halves around Europe, but he reads the game well. I think he's learnt well over the last couple of years at Juventus. I still don't think he's reached his full potential, so there is still more to come. I think he can be a leader. I think he's got enough pace. I know that Stevie Nicol thinks he hasn't got enough pace. I actually think he's quite quick. He's quite mobile. He comes onto the ball really well. And in 1v1 situations, he defends for his life. So I think he's a good defender, a good character, and he will get better and better. So with Chelsea losing Rudiger, I can understand exactly why they want him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this move does now happen for De Ligt after this big welcome that they made for him. Speaking of big welcomes,
okay,
Romelu Lukaku now, of course, saying, hey,
Lukaku,
it's true, guys. I'm back. I missed you. Ciao. Nikki, it seems that everybody, at least in this image, is happy to see Romelu Lukaku. Is everybody truly happy to see him back?
No, it's a fascinating situation at Inter. And I think actually this is something that happens at lots of Italian football clubs that perhaps people outside of Italian football culture don't see, is you get this divergence between the ultras and the tifosi, which is just the fans. And the ultras from Inter have been pretty hostile to this idea of Lukaku returning because they feel like they showed him tremendous enthusiasm, tremendous support while he was at the club. There were two huge murals outside San Siro devoted just to Lukaku during his time there. And then he turned their back on them. And so even when he was giving interviews hinting he might want to come back, there was quite a hostile response. Banners again hung outside San Siro saying, you know, the true hero isn't the one who runs away when there's some rain, he's the one who sticks through it. And there's been that response from the ultras, and they've even put out press releases, the ultra group saying, look, when he comes back to the stadium, don't fall into the trap, don't believe that this guy loves us again, no scarves for Lukaku. But your average fan, your tifoso, they don't care. They're just happy to see the guy back who was the top scorer at the club the year they won the title. The average supporter, I think, is generally very enthusiastic to think that they've got a good chance of wresting that league title back from their neighbours Milan, and certainly Lukaku returning improves that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the general fan, maybe any club, would be interested to see or enthusiastic to see Romelu Lukaku at their club. But Stuart, how do you think he'll fit in now in this Inter that's different from when he left?
It is slightly different, but it's the same system. It's a different manager, but he's played exactly. That's why they got Inzaghi to come in, because he played exactly the same system as the previous manager, Antonio Conte. And I think he'll fit in really well. If he plays up front with Martinez, they've got Gosens out on one as a left wing back, Dumfries up down the other side. It's a midfield three that are really good on the ball. But people keep thinking he needs crosses into the box. He doesn't score goals that way. He's good with his back to goal now when balls are rolled into the box. He runs down the side of defenders. If you look at his Inter goals over the last 2 years he was there, not many of them were headers in the box. Most of them were brilliant goals when he was running 1v1 against defenders. And if he can perform that partnership with Martinez again and he can get Brozovic rolling the ball into his feet, I think he'd be a hit once again at Inter.
Easier said than done. Do you agree with this, Nikki?
I think Stuart slightly understates the amount of goals that came from crosses. I don't have numbers in front of me, but I know that partnership he had with Hakimi, again, coming forward from right back, was a significant one. It wasn't always headers, but certainly crosses coming in from the right and ending up at Lukaku's feet a lot of the time. Having said that, it's definitely true the point about broadly the same system up front, certainly the same idea on the right side with Dumfries, just a slightly different player playing those balls, certainly an established relationship with Martinez that worked really, really well. And actually, I think this last season at Inter was quite fascinating because Martinez wanted to be the guy, right? Martinez wanted to have that attack to himself. And what actually he was over the last season was really inconsistent. There were periods when he was brilliant, but there were also periods when he didn't do anything for months at a time, actually, in terms of goal scoring. And I think that opportunity to reform that relationship will help him settle quickly. I also think it's worth remembering that when he left last summer, Lukaku, he had already started training with Inzaghi. And in fact, both of them had spoken really warmly about each other. It wasn't this sort of Conte leaves and then Lukaku leaves. There was a real sort of overlap period between Inzaghi and Lukaku, where the two of them really felt like they were going to work together before Chelsea came in with the big money and broke that up. So I think he's got good reasons to feel like he's going to fit neatly into the plans of the manager for sure.
Yeah, and he didn't want to take the number 9 shirt, but he did take the number 90. And as you know, Nikki, this is a kind of a speculation, right? That a lot of people think it's kind of a trolling now, Chelsea continuing this. But how do you think this came about, the number 90 now on the back of his shirt?
I think some people are reading too much into it. I know people want to say that's how much money Chelsea spent to have him for one season. I think the real reason is Edin Dzeko took the number 9 shirt while he was away and Lukaku is being at least a little bit humble about that and saying, look, I'm the one coming back after taking a new number instead of taking the number 9 like I used to wear.
And is it true that this deal was only done because of a different ownership, Nikki?
That certainly made it much more possible. I think a new owner coming in, Todd Boehly at Chelsea, made it feel more possible for Chelsea to say, you know what, this is a big financial hit we're taking on this deal, but we're going to swallow it because we're trying to move in a new direction. And there was a certain amount of sort of frustration between the previous directors groups. The people who were running the club at Chelsea felt like perhaps when Lukaku was giving those interviews and suggesting he wanted to go back, that maybe there were people at Inter pulling those strings. I don't know if there really were people pulling those strings. I think that was just Lukaku. But there was some bad blood, and certainly I think that the change has created a fresh opportunity for people to say, all right, take a step back, what's good for our club right now, instead of what we're trying to make up from the past.
Yeah, Lukaku has strings, not necessarily Ali, because he's a puppet, right? What do you think of now what Chelsea loses, economically speaking?
Well, first of all, I just love the support from Inter fans. A lot of Inter fans that were welcoming Romelu Lukaku were telling him that he was number one in the images that we saw. And to be quite honest, when I think of Romelu Lukaku and his time at Inter, at Chelsea, I should say, he never felt like he was beloved, whether that was by Thomas Tuchel, the players, the fans, and what we have seen from him as a player is that he needs that arm around the shoulder. He needs somebody to tell him, I love you, Shaq. What? Yes. He needs somebody to tell him, you're important to me. Mm-hmm. You're going to be my guy. You're going to score goals for me. I feel great when you're on the field. We're so much better when you're on the field.
Well, thank you, Ali.
You feel good about yourself, Shaq?
I do.
Are you going to go score goals for me?
I sure will. No.
Apparently that didn't happen at Chelsea. And so if you're Chelsea, you take the loss because you just don't feel like this player thinks enough of himself as a player in Chelsea, important enough, beloved enough to be productive. Mm-hmm. So you cut your losses. It doesn't make sense financially, I suppose not. But then again, the ownership comes in and says, I want results, and I want results right away. And Thomas Tuchel is saying, well, this guy's not going to give us results. He's proven that he's not going to be the guy. We need to move on from here. Cut our losses. I suppose it's the correct decision. I wouldn't do it that way. I would try to get the very best of Lukaku. So I would have that conversation with him, just like I did with Xhaka, and that guy would score goals.
Is Lukaku needy? Is that what you're saying?
Is Xhaka needy?
That's what I heard.
Lukaku, not Xhaka.
Well, both are needy.
I don't know. Do you have a message for
Shaq? Both are needy. But certainly Lukaku is needy.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting now then to see him at Inter. What should be now his stats to win everybody's love around the club, Stuart?
Yeah, I mean, I think he should be a top-class player again for Inter. I think he's an outstanding forward when he's playing with confidence. And Ali's absolutely right. When he was at West Bromwich Albion as a young player, when he went on loan there, he got love and scored goals. When he was at Everton, he got love from Martinez. When he's playing for Belgium, he gets love from Martinez. He didn't get that love from Thomas Tuchel, and that's why he failed. And he didn't make the best of what he had in front of him. At Inter, he was the main man under Antonio Conte. He's got to be the main man again under Inzaghi. And if he does that, he'll score goals. And Inter, I think, will win the title.
All right, moving on from Romelu Lukaku to talk about another player who is always interesting to see around, and the chuckles say everything. Neymar here, now being linked to a possible team outside of PSG.
Okay.
Chelsea being one of them. Ale, can you believe that somebody like Neymar is struggling to find a team?
I can. Yes, I can. Because he's really expensive and hasn't been nearly as productive in terms of winning important trophies. And when we say important trophies, we really are referring to Champions League for PSG. But more so than anything is the images that Neymar has left us with while playing with PSG. And in moments that matter, in moments that were critically important for PSG, he was either injured or not productive. He was either missing because of injury or missing on the field. Either way, he has become a caricature of himself as a player. And let me tell you something. If you're a team out there and you're a club out there, you're not going to pay the sort of money that Neymar would demand for a caricature. Mm-hmm. You want that for elite talent, which is what PSG thought they were getting and which is what I think Neymar is. Mm-hmm. Will he be that in the future? We don't know that. Only Neymar knows that. And he has to make a change. He has to look at himself in the mirror and have evaluation, objective evaluation of himself. If he does that, there's an opportunity for him to regain his level. But man, time is running out. And there isn't enough money out there for Neymar to become that player again.
We saw all those stats, impressive, but it looks like it's a little bit behind him now. Nikki, is he being linked to a team in Serie A?
There's very sort of loose rumors. I wouldn't read too much into any of them at this point, but there's the idea that he could go to Juventus. I think when you consider the recent history of Juventus, the investment they made to bring Cristiano Ronaldo in, and the somewhat underwhelming results, at least on the pitch, if you want to have a commercial conversation, it's a bit more complicated. But even that conversation with what happened with the pandemic, with football going behind closed doors, with huge lost revenues, I think that was also probably not everything they hoped it would be. I think it's hard for me to imagine Juventus going for that sort of big splash on an older player in the near future. I think, again, when it comes to younger players, it's a different conversation. When it comes to assets that you think, well, we can make a long-term investment on this, we might be able to sell for higher value, that's different. But Neymar at 30 years old doesn't really offer that. And I think Juventus will be shy of making that sort of, again, very ostentatious move like they made for Ronaldo over again.
And speaking of where he is at this moment, Neymar, PSG, Christophe Galtier now, the new coach. We know that he was being linked with the club the past few weeks. Now it looks to be official with PSG after Mauricio Pochettino's era. Stuart, with Neymar at the club, if he does stay for an extra season, does it matter who the coach is now thinking of Neymar's profile presently?
Well, I think Galtier would have gone in there and said to the board, you know, I'm going to pick the side. I'm going to get the players to play I want them to play. That's why I've had success at some of the clubs I've been at, not because I've allowed single players to do what they want to do. Now, if I pick him and Neymar does what he wants to do and doesn't follow instructions, I'm going to drop him and leave him out the squad and not play him. You've got to back me on that. And that's exactly what the board have to do, or the president has to do for the manager. Because the manager, I can't see them getting on, because he's a tough manager that likes to play a certain style of football and he wants disciplined players. Neymar is ill-disciplined in every aspect of the game.
Yeah, and he's won that reputation, at least in the past few seasons, being linked to Newcastle. I don't even have to ask if he would like
that. I don't see that happening. I understand the link given the new ownership at Newcastle United and all of the speculation that came with that new ownership. But as I keep pointing out, I was there back in May. There is nothing and no one at the club that thinks the new owners are going to be spending the kind of money it would take to bring Neymar in. Everybody sees this as being spending, but sensibly and growing the club slowly in that way. Neymar does not tick any of the boxes that people within the club feel it will be the direction.
And what were you doing there in May, Shaq?
Well, I'm freedom of the city.
Oh, yes.
That's what I do.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So now did you buy the cattle that you can actually raise in the city or not?
My cattle can graze in the city public squares.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent, Shaq.
Green
pastures. Need some cattle now and I'll be all right.
I'm proud of you. Proud of you, Shaq.
That's what I'm working on.
Now, we do want to remind everyone, Mark Ogden has an interesting article. You can find it on ESPN.com. Neymar joined Paris Saint-Germain in a world record transfer, but now he's superstar no club seems to want.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Exciting activity to come this summer. We're saying goodbye. Ana Moreno, it was a pleasure. Shaka, have a nice vacation.
Excellent.
Pleasure was all yours, Christina.
Extra time is next. Stick around. Welcome into Extra Time. Christine Alexander in the studio with me, Shaka Hislop, Ali Moreno, and Stuart Robson as
well.
No.
Okay.
Well, everybody calls you Ali, and I want to call you Ali, Alejandro Moreno.
Call him by his full name.
There you go. See that?
Like if he's in trouble, call him by his full name, like what your mother does when you're a child.
Sir, and speaking of, it's Ali's birthday next week.
Send me some cake.
Yeah, he said that so we can bring the cake.
Yeah, right. I'm not bringing any cake.
I know you're not.
Yeah,
all right.
I won't be here.
Guess you will be away.
Conveniently.
I'm shocked.
Yes. There's still ways that you could send him,
digitally. No, there aren't.
I can show you.
No.
All right, first question. For all, the fate of the world depends on one penalty kick. Which player are you taking to save the world? Any era.
Matt Le Tissier.
Wow.
I think he only missed one in his career, you know?
Here's another one for you, Shaka. Here's another one for you. Ray Stewart of West Ham took about 76 penalties, and I think he only missed once.
Wow.
Ray Stewart of West Ham.
Was he ever saving the world?
No,
because that's pressure right there.
Come on.
You only have to miss once, and then the world blows up. That's no good.
So you need somebody who's not quite there, you know, who's the pressure's not going to get to him.
And who's this?
The cables are not connecting.
Who's this?
Craig Farley, baby! He was a good penalty taker.
The fate of the world.
Hey, as was Frank. Huh? As was Frank LeBeouf.
Frank made controversy. You know what? Diego Armando Maradona.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Cristiano Ronaldo. They call him Penaldo for a reason. Raul Jimenez.
Okay.
He's a good penalty taker.
All right. Now you're gone.
All right.
Now you lost it.
Next question is for Ali.
Okay.
Do you think the likes of Barcelona and Atletico Madrid will challenge Real Madrid all the way in La Liga next season, or do you see Real Madrid winning it comfortably again?
They'll close the gap, but in the end, Real Madrid will win it again. As of right now, from what we have seen, Real Madrid continues to make very good decisions in key parts of the field, whereas both Barcelona and Atletico Madrid are still trying to find those names and those players. In the case of Barcelona, they're trying to find the money just to get the players. I just think Real Madrid right now seems to be in a very straight path where it's a bumpy ride for both Barcelona and Atletico Madrid.
Well, according to Joan Laporta, they have the money.
Well,
and
yes,
they're getting Lewandowski, Bernardo Silva, Rafinha, keeping Dembélé.
They're getting everybody.
Everybody's invited to that
every
party.
Every single player on the planet.
All right, Stuart, this one's for you. What is your favorite transfer of this window?
Ooh, favorite transfer of this window. I tell you who I like, a free transfer. We've talked about it. Perisic going to Spurs. As a wing back, I think he'd do brilliantly for them. He was much underrated when he was at Inter the last couple of seasons, and the job he did out as a left wing back. That's exactly where he's going to play for Antonio Conte. I think he'll get crosses into the box and he'll also score at the far post. So I think just one that will do very well, Ivan Perisic for Spurs.
And there's no surprise there for a couple of reasons. Nobody in our show loves to say win back the way that Stewie does. he loves some win back action. Two, nobody in this panel loves Antonio Conte more than Stewie does.
Look at the smile on his face.
I mean, it was meant to be. Win back.
I'll tell you the truth, I couldn't think of anybody else at the time. That was it, really.
It's all right, we'll take it. All right, for Shaka, will Tottenham finish above Chelsea and Arsenal?
No. I think Tottenham will finish above Arsenal, but not Chelsea.
Interesting.
That's all I got.
All right.
Okay, good.
That's
Thank
it.
You. Excellent.
Sir. I answered the question.
Yes.
All right.
Well,
good for TV time.
Brought a lot of context, a lot of background information.
You ask me a question, I answer a question. Okay. I have learned through 26 years of marriage, you answer the question before you. Mm-hmm. No more.
Can I tell you a story about...
Well, please do.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Go on.
Last night, I went to sleep. I went to bed.
Oh, okay. Oh my God, me too.
Last night, I went to sleep. Or at least I tried. My lovely wife made it a point to say, you got to fix the covers. Because she's very particular about how the covers are tucked in and everything. And she just...
Right.
No creases on the bed. Very difficult for me to do that. I was already in that, you know, when you go in the landing pattern,
you're already in.
I need you to fix the covers. I did not fix the covers. I fell asleep. My beautiful, lovely wife, who I love very much. You know what she did? She took the covers off of me, put them all on her side, and she said, you get no covers. I got no covers. I was freezing in the night. And any time that I try to reach for the covers, she would just snatch them away.
What's the moral of the story, Ali?
Well, I'm just saying, fix the covers.
Fix the covers. Listen to your wife. All right.
Oh, my God.
For the panel, speaking of short TV time, who was the most intimidating player you have played with or against in terms of their presence, demeanor, or stature?
Do wives with covers count in this... for this answer?
Sure, why not?
Oh, goodness. Most Duncan Ferguson, Everton.
Okay.
He's a brute, physically. Physically tall, I would just smash me to bits.
Not so much intimidating as much as this was a challenge that hurt the most when I was a player. And back in the day, when I could move a little bit, Shaq, I was very good at holding the ball with my back to goal. That was my thing. I would go in my turtle shell. Nobody could get around me. I was a little wide, you know, backside and everything. You know how that is, right? So I'm holding the ball, and my con from Brazil, he lined me up perfectly. And this thing just went through the back of me. And I, nothing that I ever happened to me in the field hurt as much as this. It was like every part of my body, from my ankles all the way to the top of my head, felt like they were cracking out of place. I got up eventually, and I just saw my cone, and he's just built like a brick house. Yeah, I don't have that kind of physicality. You win, Mycon. You win. You win.
I've got to say, Mycon's gone up in my estimation 100% after that joke. But no, Graham Souness. Stevie will tell you about him. Graham Souness was a central midfield player, captain of Liverpool. Not only was he, you have to say he was dirty, if he wanted to take retribution against the player, he went out of his way to do it, but he was also a top-class footballer and the leader of Liverpool when they were a brilliant side. So he was the most intimidating player I played against, I would say.
I would also say Diego Lugano, playing against Uruguay, because you look at him and he was twitching. When every time you look at him, the eyes were going in all sorts of different directions. There's something wrong with this guy.
No fear in that man.
Things are not connecting. Stay away from those people.
All right, Ale, last one's for you. What are your thoughts on Gattuso being named a manager of Valencia? Will he be able to succeed there when recently numerous others have failed?
It doesn't seem like a matchup that you would automatically think about in terms of Valencia, the club, the history, the players available to him. Maybe that's what they need, something completely off the wall. I honestly believe that they seem to be heading at least they had a plan. And now it almost feels like, nah, we're gonna go that way. Valencia needs consistency, and a managerial change certainly doesn't bring consistency. I don't know that this is a matchup I'm in love with.
Yeah, Chaka?
Sure.
Oh. Why not?
Yeah. I concur.
I tell you, you're bringing a lot, Chaka. Shout out. I got to give a shout out. So I was at the showcase tournament with my son in Dallas, Texas, Frisco, Texas. A lot of people that are fans of the show, and I mean a lot of people, but this one family in particular sticks out because the father, two kids, the wife, the father, we were at an arcade place just off wherever the fields were, and he reaches out to me, and we watch the show all the time, we take pictures, whatever, and then he says, and I don't know for what reason he felt that this was important, every night when I'm brushing my teeth, I'm watching you guys. So I said to him, well, we're all for oral hygiene. It's a priority for us. So that's my PSA message for the week.
That's where we're best.
Yes.
That's where we're best.
Yes. We are best when people are brushing their teeth.
And remember to floss.
Yes. Yes.
Viewers.
Yes.
Well, we're going to miss you, Chaka. Where are you going on vacation?
I'm going to the sunny English Isle.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to visit Stewie. I cover you.
Oh, no, you're not. I'm out. I'm not coming around mine. I'm out.
Convenient.
I'll tell you what, he'll come around in his big Maserati again. Flashes anything.
Wrap it up, Christina. Time to go.
All right, Mr. Producer.
When Stuart starts telling stories, it's time to go.
All right, time to go. Thanks for being with us on Extra Time. Remember, we have ESPN FC available daily when you brush your teeth on ESPN.
Yes. Or a hygiene, a priority.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.